Welcome to Stronger Than Failure, where we provide you with in-depth interviews with entrepreneurs on their struggles, victories, goals, and how they got started. We also give you the best tips, hacks, and information on sales, network marketing, credit, and mindset mastery. Now, here's your host, entrepreneur and author, Danny Cole.
What's up, Stronger Nation, and welcome back to another episode of Stronger Than Failure, your home for motivation, personal growth, and entrepreneurship. I am your host, Danny Cole. And as always, folks, I want to tell you thank you. We love you. We appreciate you for tuning in, being part of the show, being part of the family. If it wasn't for you, we would not be here. And if you like this show or any show that we have done in the past, please tell everybody about it. Have them tune in because everyone is stronger than failure. Plus, if you know anyone, or if you like the episode that we've had on the past, or you want to replay an episode or missed one, go to StrongerThanFailure.com, click on podcast, and you've got the whole archive there at your fingertips. All right, folks, we're about to get ready because this show here I am incredibly excited about. Today's show is going to be amazing. If you like entrepreneurship, if you like hearing about people's journey who are super successful, that have done this for years, and you get a ton of information from, then you are going to love today's show. On today's show, our guest is Mitch Free. Mitch is the owner and CEO of Zeki CNC Machining, a company he founded in 2013. Zeki manufactures precision metal and plastic components for the aerospace, defense, robotics, and firearm industries. Mitch also founded MFG.com in 2000 and served as CEO and chairman until 2013. He sold part of MFG.com to Jeff Bezos in 2005, part to Fidelity in 2007, and the rest to a private equity firm in 2013. Mitch also founded Fast Radius, a global 3D printing company in partnership with UPS in 2014 and sold a stake in 2018. Now, Mitch began his career as an apprentice machinist and developed a passion for applying advanced manufacturing technologies. Northwest Airlines recruited him to develop methods to reverse engineer and produce aircraft parts. Holder of multiple patents, his track record of innovation and leadership quickly led to senior management positions where he oversaw aircraft acquisition and commissioning projects worldwide. A dynamic and sought-after presenter, Mitch Free has spoken to Northwestern University, Harvard Business School, Wharton, Fudan University in China, the Society of Manufacturing Engineers, and appears regularly on various news outlets including CNBC and Fox Business. Mitch is also a previous winner of the prestigious Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award and has been featured in Startup Playbook and Makers, The New Industrial Revolution, Skip a Step, and in 2016, Mitch co-authored a book on additive manufacturing titled The Great Disruption. So, folks, I mean, this is going to be amazing. I am super stoked about the interview. So, without further ado, Mitch, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
I mean, dude, I'm glad you're on the show. Like, again, your resume is, I mean, it's flooring, dude. I love all about it because apparently you've been an entrepreneur for a long time, and it's amazing. We're going to get a lot of information today from you.
I've been doing it for a while, that's for sure. That's what happens when you get a few years on you.
All right, well, with that kind of being said, man, first question I want to know is, like, did you always know you want to be an entrepreneur? Because you've done so much in your life, and, like, does it run in your family?
It does in a way. My father, always had his own business, and so I did grow up around the dinner table listening to business conversations, entrepreneurial stuff. So, so it has been quite a few entrepreneurs in the family for sure.
That's pretty cool. I think that makes a big difference as far as, you know, what you talk about at the dinner table, who you surround yourself with. So, yeah, that kind of starts planting seeds for the future. So, absolutely. Well, man, go ahead. Like, I'm going to give the floor to you in a moment. I just want to hear, like, you know, how did you get started in all that you did? Like, tell me your whole entrepreneurial journey, man, because it's exciting and I want to hear a lot about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I started off, I went to excuse me, a little bit of a chuckle in there. I Well, I went to trade, you know, after high school, I went to college for about 6 weeks, and that just didn't go well. I realized that that I just wanted to say high school had come really easy to me, and I just hadn't learned how to study. And when I got to college, it was just moving at a pace that I wasn't used to, and it was something where I had to study. And I was taking engineering, and you know, still it was core classes, but still it was moving at a pace I wasn't used to. So after the 6 weeks, I dropped out and just started thinking about what I was going to do, and went to a trade school. Maybe that's better for me. I went to a trade school and looked at the different offerings they had, and I wound up taking a 1 year course in manufacturing technology. So I took that course and I got out, got a job right away. Found out I had a pretty good knack for it. It was at the time when computers and automation were really coming into manufacturing, a lot of robotics. And I was passionate about it, had a talent for it. Did that for a number of years, and then I got recruited into the airline business, Northwest Airlines, to set up rapid manufacturing to reproduce aircraft parts very quickly. Did that, and then moved into a project manager role at Aircraft Acquisitions, and led the projects where I would buy airplanes, used airplanes from different sources. Refurbish those, and I get to live all over the world doing that.
Dude, now, real quick, now that right there sounds really interesting and really cool. Now, how long did you do that for?
I did that for about 5 years. We would buy, at the time it was, you know, this was back after the Gulf War in the 90s when Eastern Airlines had gone out of business, and Northwest wanted to pick up route capacity. And so I bought a bunch of airplanes from different, you know, I bought some from Alitalia that were being turned in at the end of the lease, some from Eastern Airlines, some from Continental was in bankruptcy. And then there was a lot of work to do to reconfigure those airplanes to make them our airplanes, as far as going through everything from, you know, checking all the parts and, you know, how much time they had left on them and what we stored at the different stations we were going to fly to in case we needed a spare part, standardizing avionics, et cetera. So it was pretty good. It was kind of a fun gig. I tell you, it was eye-opening because I was paying, now, of course, it wasn't me. I was working for the airline. So I was paying about $1 million a piece for these airplanes. And then we were put $4 to $5 million in overhauling them.
Oh, wow.
I'd end up in $5 or $6 million in a DC-9 aircraft. And then as soon as we would do all the test flights and get it recertified as, you know, airworthy commercial aircraft, and then we would sell it for $18 to $20 million to the bank and then lease it back.
A nice little ROI really cool on that.
Yeah. I mean, so it was a really cool cash-raising strategy. In addition to getting, so we were getting capacity that we needed for to carry passengers, but we're also raising a lot of cash. And probably, you know, I did 30 something airplanes in rapid succession, so it raised $400-$500 million in cash flow.
Man.
In addition to putting some airplanes in service. So I did that, and I was presented with a unique opportunity in 3D CAD software, so I got to be one of the pioneers in three-dimensional CAD software for mechanical design, you know, the design of the objects. And so I started a business doing that, and it was good timing. It was right when, before I did that, most of that software had been on very expensive mainframe-type computers. This was one of the first pieces. So, in that software business, and a lot of my customers were using the software to design products, and the other half we're using them as in manufacturing companies to do the aid in the manufacturing and the programming machines that we make components. And that business was going really well. And
now, quick question.
Go ahead.
Now, did it take off really quickly when you started the business, or like from start date when you started, like how soon after did it start doing really well? I'm kind of curious on that.
Yeah, probably. It was relatively quick. I went from, I was profitable year one.
Oh, awesome!
I was profitable year one, and I think I got that business up to be about a $2 million business. So it's about a $2 million business after 3 or 4 years that I had it.
Nice.
And yeah, so I got that business, and so half my customers were designing things, the other half were making things. And they were often, I would visit my design customers, and they were having trouble finding people to make things. My manufacturing customers were looking for business. So I was constantly connecting my customers. You guys should get together, et cetera. And after doing one of those introductions one day, I was driving down the road in 1999, and I heard a commercial for LendingTree.com. Mm. Request your mortgage and let lenders compete. And that was a eureka moment for me, that I realized someone should do that in manufacturing, because at that time it had not been done. And I went home and I started writing code, and I started what became MFT.com, which was, you know, MFT, three-letter name, defines an industry. And so I built MFT.com to be a global marketplace for the manufacturing industry. Eventually that business was producing, you know, was facilitating billions of dollars a year in manufacturing transactions in lots of languages all over the globe, with offices headquartered in Atlanta, but in Shanghai, China, Seoul, South Korea, Saigon, Vietnam, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, Geneva, Switzerland, Paris, France, Munich, Germany.
Man.
And so we were facilitating a lot of that. Bootstrapped that business. I sold my CAD software once that MFC.com started taking off. I sold the 3D CAD software business in order to roll that money into the internet business. So helped fund that. And I didn't raise any money for the internet business. I bootstrapped it, used my own cash, took all the cash from selling the prior business, as well as cashed in the 401k, mortgage the house, 8 credit cards.
Wow, man.
Traditional way of doing it. So, and then, so that rocked along, and that took me a little bit longer. That took me about 4 years to get that to profitability. And so I would say I started in 2000. That was 2004. That became a really profitable business. And then about 2005, we became Prettiest Girls Party. Lots of companies wanted to buy us, acquire us for more money than I thought I would ever see in my life.
Man, that's real quick. Hold on one second. Yeah. Now, all right, the story kind of reminds me of Elon Musk, you know, where he sold his businesses and then he basically every money that he made, he put it back into business, where he's having to borrow money to, you know, make, I think his mortgage payment or rent.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, you pretty much did the exact same thing. All the money you have for businesses, 401k, credit cards maxed out. Now, but you know, you, in the short time period, you did really well. But was there a time where you're like, dude, did I make the right decision putting all this money in here? Were you nervous at all?
Yeah, you know, I think you always have those moments. With MFG.com, that was a cash-consuming business, because back in the early days of the internet there, it wasn't like it is today, where you've got lots of cheap services where you can tap into Amazon Web Services for your cloud host, you know, global cloud hosting. You don't have to worry about sysadmins and all these things that you had to have. So back then, we had to build our own server farms. Mm. That's why I had to have server farms in the U.S., Europe, and Asia. 24/7 people just to monitor the servers if a server goes down. So it was a really expensive proposition to create an internet system back then. And so I was parlaying, putting a lot of cash in. Mm. And of course, you know, the better we did, the more cash it consumed, because you needed more resources, you needed more people, more hardware, more backup devices, firewalls, more coders. Mm. And so it was a cash consuming machine for the first 4 years until I got it to profitability. And there were some tough times in there. I mean, I certainly remember times of twice I went to the hospital thinking I was having a heart attack, because it was, you know, something was coming up. Like one particular occasion, payroll was coming up on a Friday, and it was Wednesday, and I was about $30,000 short.
Oh, wow.
And I think I was just laying in bed having a panic attack. And I thought, man, I'm having a heart attack. So I went to the hospital, and they go, oh, you're just fine. I'm like, yeah, I got to make payroll.
Are you sure, guys? Yeah. Are you sure? I don't need to stay here for a little bit.
So I'm going to win. Yeah. So, you know, you figure it out. But I certainly had those, certainly had those moments. It wasn't, bootstrapping and stuff. Mm. But I didn't have any experience with raising money, and I didn't want to, I never asked friends and family for money. It's just something I felt like was would be a lot of pressure, and I lost my money, and if I went bankrupt, that's okay. I just didn't want to lose the family, friends' money. And so after the business started doing so well, all my friends are like, "What the hell? You didn't give us a shot?" You know,
I could have thrown some money in. I've got you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we got that business going pretty well, and I had multiple acquirers, and I had this French company, large public company in France, wanted to buy it in 2005, made me a great offer, and I said yes, and then we're going through the due diligence process and the contracts, and if you sell to a public company, it's not a quick process, it takes months to negotiate everything, and them to do all their due diligence and make the financial, so they'll roll into the public company financials. So we were going through that process of months, and I was about 2 weeks away from closing, and I get this phone call, and this guy says, "Hey, I work for Jeff Bezos, and he wants to meet you." I'm like, "What?" And he said, "Are you going to be near Seattle anytime soon?" And I'm like, "Well, as a matter of fact, I am."
I am.
Yeah, I think I am. So I went to Seattle to meet Hope of the Internet. But the whole time that I'm going there, as I'm flying there, I'm thinking, man, I wonder if I'm just getting pumped. Was that a prank call? I'm selling, so I was playing a joke. So I remember going to the lobby at Amazon, receptionist there is like, to help you. And I'm like, "Hey, I'm here to see Jeff Bezos." She's like, "Yeah."
Sure you are, sir.
Seriously. So she says, "Well, let me just have a seat." Yes, I did. Everybody's sitting there filling out job applications. And so she makes some phone calls, and then someone comes down and gets me, takes me up, and we go to this conference room.
Did you give her a look like, "Haha, told you"?
Kind of. I was still trying to figure out what was happening.
Yeah.
But I go up in this conference room, and I wait, and Jeff comes in, and he shakes my hand, and he starts like really quick peppering me with questions like. "Man, it's MFG.com. The way you did this is brilliant. Like, how did you know how to do this? How did you figure this out?" And it was just like, And it was just like a 1 hour of him just peppering me.
Wow.
And I thought, is this guy trying to copy? Is he going to get in this business? What is up? Mm. And so we did that, and then he says, oh, I got to go. And I'm like, well, can I get a picture? I mean, I'm going to see this guy again. I wish I would have taken my name tag off. It would have been cool. But I go back to my hotel, and this lady called me that works with Jeff and said, Jeff said to give you a call that he wants to be an investor in your business. Did you guys talk about terms? And I'm like, no, we didn't talk about terms. We didn't even talk about him investing. I didn't know that was the point of the meeting.
Yeah, I thought I was being interrogated for him to start the same kind of thing. Yeah, he got kind of nervous.
Yeah. She's like, he wants to be in business with you. I said, well, that's cool, but tell him I'm flattered, but, no thank you. The reason, I was selling in 2 weeks to another company, right? Mm. So she called me back and said, he said he's not taking no for an answer. We'll just make an offer. I'm like, that's cool. Make an offer. They made an offer, and it was very generous.
Now, real quick question.
That's a great question.
Was his offer more than what you already had on the table?
It was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I said, thank you, but no thanks. And so then Jeff calls me the next day and said, what the hell? He said, this is a rare opportunity, what you're doing. We hit it off. We think alike. I want to be in business with you. I can help you. And he said, just tell me, why is it you're not responding or taking my offers or even counter offers? I said, well, man, I said, I'm under NDA, but I'm selling the business in a couple of weeks from now. We're close to closing. And he said, oh, hell no. He said, I don't know what it is they're paying you, but whatever it is, I'll pay you $5 million more.
Oh, wow.
And he said, I'll just hire you to run it. And so I said, well, it's not. I said, your offer is already pretty good. And he said, what made you want to sell this business? What made you accept their offer? And I said, well, I bootstrapped this thing. I got a lot of cash tied up in it. It'd be nice to get liquidity, some significant life-changing liquidity. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, we'll make that happen. He said, we'll structure a deal to do that. And he threw out some terms, and I'm like, that's pretty good. And he said, what's next? I said, well, next is, I got a lot of employees, 38, 40 employees at the time, not a lot. But and he said, I said, and they all know in 2 weeks, they're cashing in their stock options. They're going to get cash. And if I decide to back out of that deal and just take you on as an investor, then they're going to be upset.
Yeah, because they've already got plans on spending this money. Yeah.
They do. So we struck a deal on that one. He said, you got to take care of it. What do you want to do? I said, well, anything I got to take care of. So he offered up a $2 million bonus just for the hell of it.
Wow.
And so I had a party in Atlanta in Buckhead. My employees didn't know. And I handed out $2 million in one night.
Man, Miss, that would be amazing.
That was a fun night. People refer to that as the money party. They still do. that was a fun night. So anyway, I called up the acquiring company and told them I had seller's remorse and didn't really want to sell the business. They said, well, if you don't really want to sell it, then we don't want to buy something and you come in, you and your team aren't happy. So they rescinded their offer.
Nice.
So I did the deal with Jeff.
Man, that's amazing.
So I did that deal. Then about 18 months later, Fidelity was Bezos chasing. Like, whatever he's investing in must be hot. So they came along and offered a crazy deal, paid way ahead of the market. This was before the crash in the 2008 timeframe. And at the time, I didn't need any more money. And they were like, well, we want in. I said, then they said, I said, because I think I'm going to generate so much value over the next few years, that I'd rather wait before I sell anymore. And they said, well, what if we pay you now for what your projection is of what it's going to be worth?
Oh, man.
And I said, okay, put it out there. So they did, and it was stupid. It was a stupidly high valuation. So I sold it, sold part of it, and took some good cash off the table in that deal. Then the market crashed, and then they didn't look so smart. I looked like I was pretty happy at that point.
Absolutely.
So rocked along. So that passes. 2012 comes, and at that point, I think I was down to about 25% ownership of the business, and always getting calls from private equity and stuff wanting to buy in. But I had this freak event where I went for my annual executive physical at Emory University and found out I had cancer.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, man, this is not my life plan. I've worked like heck and gotten this point, finally got some money in the bank. Now I'm going to get cancer?
Now, Mitch, real quick, my mom has cancer, yeah. And she's got it of the colon, liver, lung, and stomach. You know, what kind of cancer did you get, man?
I had colon cancer.
Oh, wow.
Colon cancer. But luckily, was caught early enough. I had a couple of surgeries, and it'd be about 3 months I was out of the business, and just recovering. It was the first time I had stepped away from that business in 13 years. And so during that 3 months of taking that time off, it sort of refreshed me a little bit and caused me to think that I wanted to do something else. I just didn't want to do that anymore. And so then I took the offer from a private equity group, sold my remaining shares in that business, and took a year off. And I started two businesses kind of simultaneously. I started a business called Deacon that I have today that I'm running. And I started a 3D printing business called Fast Radius in partnership with UPS. And I sold that business in 2018.
Man, you've gotten pretty good at starting businesses up, getting them doing extremely well, and selling them off. Man, that in itself is very impressive, especially seeing you didn't have that background. But you just, like you and I kind of talked before the radio show, where, you know, you see opportunities, you capitalize them, keep moving forward. You know, you can't get gunshot. Mm-hmm. You can't get fear. You got to keep moving forward the blessings that God presents you with. And do so. I'm like, seriously, my hat's off to you for what you've done, man, what you've accomplished.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, one of the things I think about, you know, about building and, you know, selling, I've done it a few times, is I never enter into a business thinking about selling. What I have learned is good things happen to good businesses, right? And there are people whose job, whether they work for private equity or you know, a major corporations or venture capital, their full-time job is to look for deals, to look for quality companies. Oh. And so, you know, I often advise entrepreneurs, hey, don't go out looking for, you know, a buyer, looking for venture capital, et cetera. You focus all your time building a quality business, and they will find you. And it has happened to me every single time. I didn't go looking for Jeff Bezos. He found me. I didn't go looking for Fidelity. He found me. I didn't go looking for UPS to be my partner in the 3D printing business. They came to me. Mm.
Like I said, that right there, that's more than a mouthful right there. I mean, like you said, yeah, if you're doing a quality business, if you're doing the right thing, you got the right employees, you got the right mindset, and you're doing the best product or the best service that you can give, then they will find you. You know, it's that whole thing, that old movie, you know, build it and they will come, Field of Dreams. Pretty much along the same exact thing.
Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes, you know, I'll see entrepreneurs spend a lot of time chasing money, trying to raise money, and I'm like, put that effort into building your business. Stop putting that effort, only trying to find somebody to invest. start your business, I don't care how small it is, but start it.
Right.
And put your effort into getting a customer, getting revenue, and whatever it is, you got to prove that the dogs will eat the dog food. And once you have proven that the dogs will eat the dog food, then you just got to make more dog food. And it's easy to raise money if you want to in order to increase the production of dog food. But I think it's difficult. Too many people will spend a lot of time trying to go raise money on an idea of which they've not taken any steps or gotten any traction or proven anyone's willing to pay for.
Nope, you're absolutely right, man. Again, you're dropping nuggets of wisdom left and right, man, and I appreciate the mention. And I got a question I want to ask, all right, as far as, you know, you've been very successful, and if you wanted to retire right now, you could. So I want to know, like, what is your why, man? What keeps you motivated? Because you still got a business now. You keep moving forward. You're doing everything that you want to do. So what is your why?
You know what? I don't think I know how to do anything else. I enjoy building a business. I enjoy developing people, being involved in seeing things come to life, whether it's products or business models. It's just what I enjoy doing, and I've got so much experience and wisdom doing it now. Just not difficult, not stressful, and I feel at this point I'm almost like a well trained athlete that just knows the race. So
I love it. Yeah, and once you get, you know, it sounds like you already know what your flow is at, what you're good at. And, you know, once you do it, like we've heard before, I know you've heard before, is, you know, find something that you love doing, your passion, and you'll never work a day in your life. And it sounds like you found that.
That's right. Oh, absolutely. But I've been in aviation, I've been in manufacturing, I've been in software, I've been, different things. And so I wouldn't say I'm particular. I know manufacturing very well, but I'm not particularly tied to that. I just enjoy
business. Gotcha. All right, well, we're getting close to the end of the show, so I got a couple more questions real quick. And one, the show is Stronger Than Failure, so everyone out there, no matter who they are, whether, you know, no matter the race, gender, background, age, everyone, there's things that people struggle with. So what is something that most people that know you don't know that you struggled with, and what did you learn from that, Mitch?
That's a good question. So I would say, you know, probably the thing, you know, so business-wise, probably the thing that I struggled with the most was really financial acumen in terms of, you know, I understand finance very well on a, you know, an intuitive level. You got to take in more than you send out. But a lot of times I really struggled with deep analysis of financial documents, balance sheets, et cetera, and how, you know, P&L, but it can get really complicated when you start layering in lots of costs, start layering in depreciations and deferred revenue, and lots of things. Where I've had some board members in my time that are just geniuses, and they can sit there and read the P&L and the balance sheet, and they know the DNA of the company almost instantly. And so, yeah, I'm not as good there. As a lot of people are. And on the personal side, I'm just not a swimmer. I wish I was a swimmer.
You don't know how to swim?
No.
Mitch.
I know.
Oh, we got to call Vic up and go out on the boat then. Yeah, you've got to learn how to swim.
I know. My parents never took me swimming as a kid.
Do you go to lakes and go to bodies of water, or are you kind of afraid of that?
Oh yeah! I have a beautiful pool at my house. I can get my toes in there.
You're staying in that shallow end, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Now, so the main company right now is going to be Zeki CNC Machining. Now, quickly tell people exactly what all that entails and how they can get contact with you for business. How they can get in touch with you to do what they need to solve their problems.
So. Again, the business is ZYCI. So CNC machining. So we're taking pieces of metal and making very precise objects, parts that go in lots of interesting things, satellites, rockets, missiles, firearms. We have a, we have one whole facility just dedicated to making firearms, suppressors, silencers, lots of robotics. I was at an Air Force today, Air Force base today, looking at remaking some stuff for C-130 aircraft.
Cool.
So we make parts and go in lots and lots of things. We just did an automatic COVID testing station. Many different things.
That's really cool.
So it's people don't, every time people don't think about how things get made. There's a lot of manufacturing going on. There's a shortage of it, which is why I started that business.
Oh, there's a shortage of the manufacturing going on right now? It's like, it's just in America or worldwide?
There's a shortage of companies in the U.S. that manufacture at a high level. Hmm. And there are certain industries, such as aerospace and defense, like defense stuff, military related, that all falls under a regulation called ITAR, International Trafficking in Arms Regulation. And the other one is the Buy America Act. And while so much manufacturing capacity has moved to Asia or to Mexico, there's a lot of stuff that just can't be done outside the U.S. intellectual property protection. And there's a shortage of companies that know how to do it. And so that was my thesis with starting Zeki, was I knew there was a shortage. There was a shortage of capacity, and that thesis has proven to be correct, because I've not spent $1 on marketing, and we stay 100% full and have customers trying to give us more work every day.
That's a huge blessing. Wow, way to go!
Yeah. So it's a you know, people don't think of manufacturing as a sexy industry, but I tell you what, it is in demand and it's a lot of money.
Dude, that's impressive. And again, dude, I've loved the whole interview with you so far, because Mitch, you've done everything, done it well. You've went through times where, like I said, you were cast out, bootstrapped, worried about, you know, if it is going to make it. Thought you're going to have two heart attacks. Just doing what you love, and it's super easy for you now. And that's amazing, man. Again, I am very proud of you, Mitch.
Thank you. I appreciate the kind words.
Now, I know you don't do marketing. I'm sorry, say that one more time.
I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Oh, no. No, I appreciate that, man. Thanks a lot. Now, I know you don't do marketing. You don't really need it. But if people were looking to get in touch with you for the manufacturing aspect, you know, where could they go to as far as your website? How could they get in touch with you?
Yeah, just go to the website, www.zyci.com.
Perfect.
Zyci.com.
That's it, folks.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so you heard it right there. Mitch is amazing, an incredible, humble guy, as you can tell. And if you need precise manufacturing on, is it just larger scale or what? Like, what's the smallest amount y'all do? And apparently you do huge, large deals if you're doing it for governments and Air Force bases and things like that.
Yeah, it just depends. But it's not meant for inventor that says, "Oh, I got an idea for a new widget." Probably not.
Oh yeah.
Probably for a product company that has products.
All right, good deal. Well, I won't give you my idea on an invention I want to do. All right, Mitch. Yeah. Well, man, thanks a lot for being on the show. We're winding down. We got to close out now. But again, dude, thanks so much for being on the show. We appreciate you. Thanks for being here. And everybody, remember, you are stronger than failure.
Stronger Than Failure, where we provide you with in-depth interviews with entrepreneurs on their struggles, victories, goals, and how they got started. We also give you the best tips, hacks, and information on sales, network marketing, credit, and mindset mastery. Entrepreneur and author, Danny Cole. Stronger Than Failure.